We are Ingrid and Hara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey.
We are glad to present to you a special edition of our Business of Collaboration podcast. During three podcasts, we will interview three keynote speakers of the ISPIN conference in Florence, Italy, on 17th of June. ISPIN is the International Society for Professional Innovation Management. Its members represent many sectors, including the research, industrial, consulting, and public sectors. The conference in Florence celebrates innovation and 500 years since Da Vinci and addresses three critical challenges: industry, university, a new vision of cooperation, open innovation and lean startup, incorporate innovation portfolios, building invisible companies. This is our third Business of Collaboration podcast, together with ISPIN Florence Conference. We interview Professor Anton Kritz, Associate Professor MBA IBPC at the Australian National University, and Associate Professor ANNU Tsinghua Master of Management, and he's Director at In Management Consulting. Welcome, Professor Kritz, to the Business of Collaboration podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have the first question for you is, Professor Kritz, you have a experience of industry, government, and now academic. Why did you become a professor?
Gee, that's a good question. Probably in the wrong business. People would be surprised, but you actually get a chance to be an entrepreneur in university and in academia. But without being the sort of taking the risks of an entrepreneur does. So you get to explore and be an innovator. And obviously I do a lot of work in the innovation management space. So I think it's a natural fit, but I did enjoy both working for government and working in industry. And academia is a great place to share with others, whether it's students or whether it's the business community or more broader. So probably in some ways it's a less selfish pursuit and a more selfless pursuit. So probably that was what attracted me into academia.
And what is the work you are most proud of?
Yeah, the work I'm most proud of as an academic is probably the work I've done on regions and developing regions through innovation management and, you know, making a real difference to those regions, encouraging people in regions to champion their causes, come up with, really important projects for an area and making a difference. So I've had some good opportunities to work in New South Wales on the Central Coast, the Hunter, and in other parts of Australia like Bendigo and Victoria, plus a lot of work that I've done in Tasmania, northeast and northwest Tasmania, and now being in Canberra. And also I've had a history in the Queensland, so I've covered a lot of the east coast of Australia. But you know, the really pleasing thing is when you come up with a plan, you execute that plan and you see it being implemented and making a serious difference to the young people in a region and to the business people in a region and the different stakeholders. And you're seeing that that's actually adding value. It's not just about economic value, about social value as well. So, yeah, fantastic to see some of the bigger exercises that we've done come to fruition. And, you know, it's been a pleasure to see those outcomes.
Yeah, I think this now is coming very important, this 360 approach of value and impact.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think, areas of methodology that I'm working on, like action research, action learning, getting closer to the people that you're actually researching is really important. I think the academic community is starting to realize that if you don't do that, your worth to the stakeholders you represent and the professions you represent is not as great as it should be. So, And, you know, there's the argument about rigor and relevance, but I think that argument's a bit of a becoming more of a moot point as we progress, because really good research, good practice, you know, go hand in hand. And if it's not good theory, well, then you shouldn't be doing it. And if the practice isn't backed by good theory, it probably doesn't resonate well enough with the people that you're trying to make a difference to.
And from which failure did you learn the most?
Which failure did I learn the most from? Probably, I wouldn't call it a failure. I always say to my students and business people that I work with, you should look at things like trial and error rather than failure, because abject failure is not something you should pursue anyway. So, but you know, there's always aspects, and what is failure? But probably the toughest thing that I had to endure was going through a business experience where when I was a CEO of a company, and you have managers, et cetera, that may not do what you're hoping that they would do. And, you know, in a lot of jobs that I've been involved with, you know, you have to let people go and things like that, because they're not functioning the way you want them to function. And so, you know, I suppose in terms of business, I've learned some valuable lessons. But those lessons helped me learn a lot too. So it wasn't as if, you know, it was just costing money, for example. I've fixed most of those problems up, or nearly all of them up. But the lesson in life that people are all different, and you have to manage them very carefully and differently, and that no two things are the same, and you have to work carefully with it. And so, you know, I probably minimizing my risk in my as you get a bit older, but so I've had some tough times, but it's not as if none of them put me out of business, put it that way.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because you mentioned now almost, if I can sum up, like it's all about people at the end.
Yeah, it is. And I treat that very respectfully. I treat people with very a lot of care. So, you know, in the regional innovation systems, they talk about and every being different. Well, you go down people, and it's exactly that. Every person is very individual and very different. And although in science and places like that, we're trying to segment and trying to group, we often forget how unique each individual is, and the layers and the padding and what the thinking process behind each person is. And probably some of the best things I've done in the last few years is facilitate, you know, quite eclectic groups and try to improve that facilitation, so you find touch points with each individual and trying to actually get the best out of individual, but also understand deeply how that individual ticks and what that individual needs to understand to be able to share well within the group.
You have an interesting paper on knowledge sharing and collaborative innovation at industry clusters, so which is more how you mentioned now about bringing value and impact, co-working, mixing the theory with the practice. What was your conclusion?
The conclusions about clusters are that they're all different again. So sorry, it's becoming a sort of a common point here, a common theme. But each one you have to deal with differently. So, you know, some clusters are very much top-down. Ideally, where top-down beats bottom-up, as one of my participants once said, you know, and that perfect line is what you're aiming for. Because at the end of the day, you need people to engage and be empowered in the system. So we learned that, you know, some clusters need to be managed more, you know, like in United Arab Emirates, in that case, is much more top-down. They've got many more resources. China's a good example where you've got a lot of top-down resourcing. So that's a different. You have a different approach than, say, in the Australian environment, where you have to, you know, you have to bricolage and you have to utilise a lot of the limited resources and make the most out of those limited resources to get a better outcome. So, having said that, I think Australia could do a lot more investment in their clustering and clusters to get better outcomes. And that we probably don't put enough sufficient resources into that area. And I suppose in Australia, we're very careful about mentioning the cluster or C word nowadays, because other aspects like innovation precincts are being mentioned, because some of the clusters that have gone on before may not have got the outcomes people hope for. And in many ways, to be honest, it's about poor management of those clusters than it is about the concept. So people forget that you have to have extraordinary good management and leadership in a cluster, because you're often managing a very complex system with multiple players.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's complex because the different roles and responsibilities and the mission has to be very well communicated.
Yes, so in Australia, I've been involved in a concept called regional innovation management, which with ISPM, International Society for Professional Innovation Management, makes a lot more sense now. So I treat every system as something that you have to have that vision. You have to have, like an organisation, you become quite disciplined about what you're doing. And if you don't have good leadership and management, doesn't matter what that system is, it will fail. So a lot of people, sometimes it's easy to go and put a friend into a system and say, oh, look, could you manage that? But actually they're much more complex, and the networks and the crossovers and the spin-offs and the elements that you're trying to engender through that system are really important. So you really need very, very skilled and very, very knowledgeable people to run such a system.
And you have another paper on digital platforms, on the link between service quality and relationship quality, about engagement. What were the findings here? Because this is quite interesting topic.
You're going back into the archives a bit here. So I suppose one of the things that we've learned, and we increasingly learn, and the companies that are doing better at it have integrated their offline and online systems much more effectively. I think when we wrote that paper, it was the early, more earlier days of that integration. But it's been interesting to watch as companies since that, some of the big retailers in Australia have struggled a lot because they didn't integrate their online and offline systems. So it doesn't matter whether it's banking, whether it's retail, whatever it is, very much the online banking phenomenon. But each country is a bit different again. So Australia's been a laggard in many ways, but it's caught up in recent years in that online, offline area. And so I think, at the end of the day, the relationships are different between those two, but you need the touch points, and you need to be careful about what you're trying to target and how you're trying to draw people in and get them involved and engaged in a process. And, it was many years ago, it was more instrumental, but we're starting to, with the more personalised online environment, we're able to really target in on individual people and give a personal relationship. But we should never forget that social relationships are much more more complicated than that, and that we, people rely on all their senses in a relationship. So there's there's value in both, but how you manage that process is really important. How you bring it together is really important. And you never forget either the offline and online when you're trying to actually engage people.
Yeah, that is a great sentence as well. Now, I have a question for you. It's controversial always because the meaning, but it's very important to answer. I think it's more like a philosophy almost. So the question is, what is innovation for you?
Oh, do you want my complicated version?
Yes.
Innovation for me is positive change. Yeah, innovation for me is positive change in a system. So, innovation is, where you're obviously making change in a business model process in the technical terms, but essentially it's getting people to really embark on change, enjoy change, and go about making that change in a way that you're bringing others with you. And I suppose Machiavelli is the quote I always refer back to. You know, people don't realize, but Machiavelli's concept of change and the difficulty of change really wasn't just about the politics. It was about the resistance. It was the resistance people would have for some change in a system. And he really captured that beautifully well. And he said, you know, the people that are in a system have got a lot to lose because they've put that system in place. And so, you know, for me, innovation is really about championing through people change in a system and helping those people champion that change. And that means, you know, packaging, selling an idea, getting sponsors, getting people around, the coalition around it, and the work in the innovation champion space of Howlett and others has been fantastic in unlocking. And I still think that people haven't got that yet. They don't realise that it's not about the technical. The technical is the outcome. The people are the soft elements and tissue that makes the outcome happen in an ecosystem of innovation.
Yeah, I think you are so right, Anton. I totally commit to your, and I think is that you are the first person I am hearing, like you are saying this, like to bring this concept of ecosystem into the definition of innovation. It's about, like you mentioned, the coalition, the people around to make the change, to champion the people to come with you for this change. And you are amazingly right. Yeah.
Hopefully I'm learning something over time. Yeah. Hopefully I'm getting better. So I'm writing like a bottle of red wine. I think writing.
No, but I can see your experience in industry and government here. You are a speaker at the ISPIN conference in Florence, Italy. What are your main points you are going to talk about?
Well, fortunately, I've been able to get more involved in the ISPIN community in the last, 5 years. And we've been running, sessions, very involved sessions. So I really enjoy getting down and getting dirty, not just presenting, but also, working with the people in the ISPIN community to come up with some really good outcomes and flying. So we'll be running workshops. One is about action research, more intensive workshop. We think that's a really good methodology to bridge the gap between the triple helix or quadruple helix of industry, government, university, and community. But we're also running a major event with the Florence community around the intake of tourism numbers in Florence, which is around 14 million, which is incredible. We've just seen recently in Venice an issue about passenger liners coming into a port, which is really chock-a-block, and it's got other externalities that are playing out there. So, this is a real challenge for Florence. And so we're going to take up that challenge with the Florence local community, but also engage the ISPIN community and bring the best of the best together to actually come up with some solutions for how do we manage such an influx of tourists per annum in such a small area, given the nature of the environment, the local level of involvement, the needs of that local environment about, just not only sustainability, but also community development and economic development. So there's a whole range of things. So that's what I'll be talking about. I'll be talking about a particular challenge in the Florence region, which we've been doing now, and it's been, congratulations to the ISPIN organisers and the committee and the people involved, that we've been able to do these regional challenges, different locations like Porto, Vienna, Stockholm, back in Brisbane, and try to help the local community with trying to solve something that's a wicked problem in their environment. And so that's been a real fun thing to do.
Yeah, and this findings we can apply, if it's possible, to other tourist cities like Barcelona or Amsterdam, I am thinking now. allowed.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, they have this problem of tourists, and it's impacting not only the locals, we can say, but as well the economy, in the sense of, for instance, the Airbnb and how the centers, these centers are not for the locals anymore in some cases.
Exactly, you know, Airbnb and others have really changed the domain, and you know, they've locked into a gap in the marketplace that was there, and so you know, this is becoming it's a global phenomenon now. Everything, you know, that we're dealing with is very global. So how, you know, what's happening in Florence is similarly happening, as we said, in other parts of the world, including Australia. Tasmania's got the same problem at the moment with the number of tourists that don't know how to handle it. And it's not last year we did one in Stockholm where it was a health issue, and how do you fund the health system or support the health system? In their case, it's a free system, but the demands on the system keep increasing. So we love tackling very difficult problems. So you know, innovation is about, you know, and we put innovation at its best when we're trying to solve wicked problems, really, because you don't solve them, you try to resolve them, and the environment keeps changing. You have to play with that change as it's occurring. But most importantly, you have to put the stakeholders in a position where they're starting to own that challenge and take ownership. So that's one of the things where we've really worked hard on in Florence, is to work with the local community to make real local change and to sustain that change after the event.
Yeah, that's a very good, like Cotter said, not forget the legacy and then next year. And do you find some interesting findings how to solve the issue?
Yeah, we've been working on that with my colleagues. We've been from different parts of the world. We've been working on how to resolve such problems, and we're getting better at it. But it's a challenge. There's been, you know, Eleanor Ostrom and people like that are the Nobel laureates that have looked at these issues in, you know, the really big issues in the globe that we have to deal with, like global warming and aspects like that. So it's really about the process. We're really putting a lot of effort into understanding the process, how to improve the outcomes for such challenges, and see if we can get better results each time. So we're doing quite a bit of research on that at the moment to look at look at our techniques and look at the process and look at how we can improve that. So they're the sort of lessons that ISPM's generating for us.
I am going to Florence next week, so I will meet you there.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I will go to your keynote to see what you're working on and the stakeholders and the insights. Yeah,
because I was saying with my colleagues from Florence that we're opening it up. We're even potentially going to reframe the problem a little bit on the day. So to ensure that it's generated by the local community, that we're not putting something on top of that area. So, you know, that will be fun. So, and it's dynamic, and those systems are dynamic. So really it's an action learning, action research session in itself.
Which day do you have this?
It's on the Monday. It's from 1:30 after lunch on the Monday.
Okay, good. So noted.
Yes.
So now we have some extra questions to know you better as a person. As we discussed, it's all about people. So if the people wants to work with you and to understand your resource and to put them into practice, is one of the key elements. So here's the question. What is your favorite place for going on holidays coming from Australia?
You're asking my international ones or my domestic ones? Okay. Prague in Czech Republic, because that's sentimental. My father's from the Czech Republic originally. When he emigrated out to Australia. So my favourite place in the world outside of Australia has to be Prague, and a little place called Tábor, which is a couple of hundred kilometres south of Prague, which is the centre of Bohemia. So it's pretty close to where we're, you know, when we're talking about innovation, creativity, Bohemia is about as good as it gets. So I'm always very proud of that fact. In Australia, to be honest, I like all parts of Australia, so it'd be very hard to pin one, but I do like Queensland, probably because I enjoy my recreational fishing and things like that, but I've got so many different parts of Australia where I enjoy that as well. And you've got, as I said before, you've got Tasmania, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, the ACT, Canberra, where I work. They're all great places, Northern Territory. So it's a bit embarrassing because when it comes to Australia and the environment, you're in one of the best places in the world, and temperature-wise, it's fantastic.
How do your mornings look like? If you have a routine in the morning?
Oh, right. How do my mornings look like? Yeah, how do my mornings look like? Well, that's a good question. Depends where I am. Nowadays, I'm moving around a fair bit. So my mornings, I go for a walk. Generally, that's one of the things that I really enjoy doing is walking. And I like having a smoothie, which is one of my, always like a nice smoothie to start the day off. And then I start to get into the writing and the reading and everything else that we have to do. But my mornings are fairly basic, but they're enjoyable.
And how do you like to spend your spare time on weekends?
The most favourite thing is probably I love watching a thing called Australian Rules Football. So it's one of my favourite pastimes. I did play it at a lower level, but I enjoyed playing football. I enjoyed my soccer as well. We call it soccer here, but it's actually called football as well. But as a pastime, I really enjoy my fishing, and I do a lot on my kayak, and I'm reasonably successful, but I put the fish back. But really enjoy paddling, and I sort of go into that sort of non-thinking mode, or, you know, the deeper brain's processing, I'm sure, when I'm paddling, and I'll get these aha moments when I'm doing it, and I enjoy that as well. You go into a routine, but your brain's still processing. So
yeah, exactly.
and in those processing moments, I get these, yes, that's the solution. Yeah, but having said that, I really enjoy fishing and it's funny, my fishing and my academic career have actually merged a little bit because I treat the metaphor of fishing very similar now to, you know, writing an article, sending it in, submitting it, hoping that somebody will take a bite of the hook. and then, you know, you never know how big that bite might be, and you never know how big the outcome might be. So it's not a bad metaphor, actually, the old fishing metaphor.
Yeah. And do you have a favorite podcast?
Yeah, I've got a few, actually. Masters of Scale is from the United States is one of them. Freakonomics is another one. Adam Grant's work, and it sounds like I've got too many time for podcasts. Malcolm Gladwell's podcast as well. So, and the ABC in Australia, they have he's a really good one. ABC in Australia have some really good podcasts on economics and a number of elements as well. So yeah, I didn't think I would enjoy podcasts that much, but in the last few years, I've gained a lot of ideas, and they often synthesize some really good material, particularly Gladwell, Adam Grant, and people like that. And you can go back and look at the sources of that material, and then, you know, they have real benefits for my research as well.
Who would you like to be as well interview in this Business of Collaboration podcast?
I didn't quite understand that question, actually. So could you give me a little bit more? Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, if you will recommend to someone else to be interview here.
Yeah.
So like I am asking them the questions.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Are you talking about a famous person or somebody within the ISBM community or what
yeah.
what
ISBM community is okay.
Okay. Okay. Who would I like to be interviewed in the podcast? John Besson. I'm not sure if he's been interviewed yet, but I find him a very interesting person. He's got musical talents that go well beyond. He's in the ISBM band, which is sensational. Is one of the highlights of that event. And there's a lot of wisdom in people like John Besson. So I'm always interested in listening to those people with lots of experience, but also maintain their contemporary nature. So, yeah, I reckon John Besson, if he hasn't been interviewed yet, would be fantastic.
Okay, good. Do you know if he's in Florence next week?
He will be. He will be.
So then, will you do?
Yeah, that's right.
So, thank you very much, Anton, for this conversation.
Well, I'm very happy that I got the opportunity, so thank you for that, and thanks for lining it up with me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find a sum up of this podcast with pictures and interviews at noco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is NoCo Platform. See you next month.